All right, here we go. All right, good morning, everyone. This is Commissioner Brian Kalk. We're meeting the 12th floor of the Capitol today. It is Wednesday, April 23rd at exactly 10 a.m. I would note for the record that we're starting exactly on time today, so I appreciate that. The comments I would have is just a couple things. The first is last week, all three of the commissioners, we were over at part of the Health Department Summit. They put together on CO2 rules, impacts to energy-producing states. Thought that was a really good job. I think, and I see actually Basin over there, Dale was a big lead in some of that, putting it together with the health department. I thought that was really good. We had a lot of states there and kind of set the stage for, I think, the folks that do the health department jurisdictional area, public service commissioners, governor's office, trying to shape the discussion on what the CO2 rules will look like. And once they hit the street, I think then we'll really see some work shaping out of the what coalitions form and how we work that forward. So I look forward to that. And on a lighter note, I'm excited to find out, I guess, 2 weeks ago that my young friend Ryan Smith was drafted by the Saskatchewan Rough Riders up in Canada. Good Bison. And this weekend is the Green and Gold game. So it's a good day in North Dakota. And Weston Dressler, the Bismarck product, will be playing in Kansas City this year for the Chiefs. So good news for North Dakota. And that's all I have on my front. Commissioner Christman, anything?
Well, I had originally just wanted to point out also the Health Department Summit and commend Dave Glatt and the Health Department on that effort, as well as the companies that took part in it and all the states. It was interesting to see a cross-section of America, just about half the country's states were represented in that, and are concerned, as are we, about the direction that the country's heading with the energy industry. But your last comments about the NDSU football players, isn't there another one that's a new electrical engineer out in western North Dakota now, I believe, with Basin Electric?
Oh, absolutely. That big tackle got signed. That's right. And Weston Dressler, I should say, was a UND product, just for the record. He's a kid that went to KC.
That's right.
Commissioner Fedorchak?
It's hard for me to top all the sports news, so I'm not really going to attempt to do that. And we have a big agenda, so I say we just get at it.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner. With that, we have several items on consent. I would move passage of the items on consent.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Just want a quick administrative note on consent. I noticed a small typo on BK1. We spelled electric incorrectly. And then just in case someone was interested why the True Wireless pulled their application, the FCC approval of their plan has not yet been granted, so that's why they withdrew that. So just interesting to note that. Okay, we'll move right into the regular agenda. Get right to it. Item BK1. I move the Commission adopt the finding of fact, conclusion of law, and order granting a waiver of procedures and time schedules and issue a corridor certificate number 152 and route permit number 164 to Basin Electric Power Cooperative authorizing construction of approximately 197 miles of 345 kV and 230 kV electric transmission lines and associated facilities extending from the Antelope Valley Station near Beulah, North Dakota, to the Neset Substation near Tioga, North Dakota, case number PU11-696.
Second.
I'll take some time and walk through the order, but I'm sure there'll be a lot of questions when we're all said and done on this. Basically, the little background. In December of 2011, Basic submitted a letter of intent to the Public Service Commission notifying the Commission of its intent to construct approximately 200 miles of transmission line from the AVS station to Tioga. I should note, too, that no longer are letters of intent required, but it is nice when we do know about these projects well in advance. So it was 2011, the letter of intent. In March of 2013, Basic submitted its combined application for a waiver of procedures and time schedules and its certificate of corridor compatibility. In July of 2013, the Commission issued a notice of filing and notice of hearing on Basin's application and found the application to be complete. Jumping ahead a little bit to the hearings that were conducted, we did three different hearings. September 4th at 10:30 Central Time in Kildare, North Dakota. September 5th at 10 a.m. Central Time in Tioga, North Dakota. And September 12th, 10 a.m. in Williston, North Dakota. Each one of these cases, or each one of these hearings, we had members of the public there as well as interested groups from different organizations. A little background about Basin. As most of us know, Basin is a regional wholesale electric generation and transmission cooperative, organized under the laws of North Dakota, headquartered in Bismarck. They serve more than 137 member systems and have 2.8 million customers in 9 states. And I think that's something to always remind people, that just how big base and service area is, and the generation transmission used in North Dakota impacts a lot of areas around the region. Basin proposed to construct the 345 kV line, as we talked about in the initial announcement. Let's see here. Will be constructed, owned by Basin, with the exception of 31 miles of 115 kV that will be owned by the Basin member cooperative, Montreal Williams, as it goes into one of the substations. Basin's project is needed to provide members across the baseload, across the area, baseload generation to increase load because of increasing load in their service areas and to address grid reliability. A lot of numbers were presented in Basin, and you know, during the time of the hearings, they talked about a 55% growth and 6% annually over the next few years, but we've seen updated numbers throughout the state that, you know, up to around 3,000 megawatts is needed in the state of North Dakota. So this order addresses the record, what was presented at that hearing, but I would just always remind folks the backdrop of just how much is needed out there in North Dakota to meet our growing demands. And based on that, we also had members from different cooperatives. Mackenzie Electric testified that their load growth has grown 300% since 2005 and almost 70% alone in 2012. During the testimony, he stated the cooperative has been notified by the Western Area Power Administration, WAPA, that the winners that the cooperative may be load limited in the Watford City area, so always the backdrop of the importance of reliability and availability of power. The total estimated cost of this project is $375 million. Going to some of the more detailed discussion, during the discussion there were several alternatives that were considered, including not constructing the project, but basically the only project, in my opinion, that that really met the long-term solutions, that met the growth area, was this project. There's really a lot of concerns that came out, and I understand that, and we'll kind of walk through more of those, but at the end of the day, if you put power lines too close together, then you have reliability impacts that way. If you don't put the power lines where the load is at, you're not going to solve any of those problems. So in my opinion, this is by far the project that meets the requirements of all the stakeholders in it. And it also came out during some of the other discussion that there was an alternative B talked about that might have presented other opportunities, but it didn't meet the load requirements of this project. But Basin also testified that they'll need that loop at a later time. And so it's interesting, the way I see this playing out is this case, we'll have a vote here shortly, but there's going to be other transmission needed in North Dakota by Basin Electric and others to meet the 3,000-megawatt demand that is projected over the next 20 years. So it's not like this is a one-and-done kind of project. This is going to be a project that hopefully we get built and constructed, but there'll be others, and we'll need generation that'll go with that in the future as well. Let's see here. Basin evaluated a network of 46 individual 1,000-foot corridors. Basin testified they're preparing a draft EIS and a supplemental draft EIS with alternatives in the NEPA process going on. And probably now is as good a time as any to segue on the NEPA discussion. Prior to being on the commission, I worked in the Marine Corps with environmental things for many years, and probably involved in over 100 different NEPA discussions, all the way from CADEXs to EAs to environmental impact statements. And I got a pretty strong background in how the NEPA process works, and it's a separate process. It's a separate process, and the goal of NEPA is it applies only to federal agencies. When the jurisdiction was set out, it exempted, if you will, private institutions, only federal things like Department of Defense, or in this case, Basin, because of the RUS hook. So I've always viewed NEPA as a separate process. And so one of the things, jumping to the end, you'll see that we're going to require that when the NEPA is done, they file it with us, and we'll consider that. But the way the NEPA process works is it's a separate process. If this wasn't a federal nexus, NEPA would not be even involved in our decision. But the fact that it is, I think it's only prudent that when the final NEPA is done, then we do consider what that basically comes out with. And in my experience with NEPA, that the company will need to get to a finding of no significant impact before they'll be able to get the approval from that body. And that may require mitigation. It may require other things. But that's a separate process that could take some time. And so that's why, for me personally, this order reflects requirements that I feel that we have direct jurisdiction on, and it meets those requirements. So I got a little sidebar there, but talking about the NEPA, I think, is one of the areas we'll probably have a lot of discussion on. There was some discussion about underground transmission. And quite honestly, building underground transmission lines significantly damages the environment more, and it does add overall cost. But the big thing for me was, you know, some of the areas that this transmission line is going through are, and we've all been out in that part of the state, that it's going to be challenging enough to build transmission lines that you have maybe six or seven poles in a mile area. If you started disturbing that much ground to move, put these lines underground, it would make much more environmental impact than what the current system is designed as. So that's why I feel that underground line is not appropriate. This project will meet all the requirements of the Rural Utility Services and as well as the National Electric Safety Code. The structures themselves will be around 115 feet tall. The top of the pole will be approximately 15 inches in diameter. The bottom of the pole, 50 inches in diameter. There will be some special situations which require a H-frame. I suppose that's in certain areas where you've got more pressure and tension coming in, but the majority of it will be the typical structure, one pole, 115 feet. As I stated before, the line will require approximately six to seven structures per mile, depending on terrain and other design factors. The right-of-way for the 230 kV segments will be 125 feet, and for the 345 kV will be 150 feet. Construction of the project is anticipated by the company in spring of 2014. That's providing they have all the other things put into place. And they're hoping to have it completed by the end of 2015, this first part of it. The last part of it, Judson to Tandy, could be completed no later than the fourth quarter of 2017. So as you can see, this is a project that takes some time. Even after all the approval is granted, it has to be built. There was many other things that we looked at. There were some businesses in the area, particularly two of them. There really was no reasonable alternative because they're located close to the substation. If you're going to get into the substation, you need to go by those businesses. There's parts of the project that goes through the grasslands. There is a, looking for here exactly where I put it at. Yes. The portion that goes through the grassland, the Forest Service will be heavily involved to evaluate the impacts of the project, and the Forest Service is participating in the NEPA discussion. Basin will certainly have to approve to get the permit from the Forest Service before they can complete construction in that part of it. So that's just another example of another agency that has a touch on this project, but we're certainly aware that the Forest Service discussion is very centered to this route as well as others. There's some school trust lands that are managed by the North Dakota State Land Department. Basin must obtain easements from the department before routing through these lands. The route is also located within 500 feet of four rural residences. Waivers have been obtained by all four of these homeowners. I should add, too, that on some perspective, that when, at that time, it would have been myself, Commissioner Clark, and Commissioner Kramer, when we worked on the Center to Grand Forks 345 kV line, that was the first time the commission had built a 345, had sited a 345 kV line for over 30 years in North Dakota. And so, you know, it really puts in perspective, I think, just how long we've gone as a state without having to build major transmission. And the reason I think of it now is in that particular route, boy, there was a lot of challenges with homeowners because trying to thread a needle from the center North Dakota to Grand Forks, avoiding all the homeowners, is very hard because if you run it down the highway, people live next to the highway. If you go across the farmland, that gets tough too. So the fact that there was only four residences that were within this 500 feet, I think, is significant because they were able to thread the needle without having this get closer than that to residences. And granted, it is more open in the west, but it still was a good route in that case. The basin will also comply with the Avian Power Line Interactive Committee guidelines, dealing with some of the issues with that the eagles might come into play, as well as other bird species, if you will, avian species that go through there. They'll continue their consultation with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And that's the thing that I think to remember is it's not like after today's vote that they're done working on this project. They need to continue discussion with the Forest Service, continue discussion with the Fish and Wildlife Service, continue discussion with the State Historical Preservation Office. This is the one big step, in my mind, in the process of getting this line built. So Basin will also be installing bird flight deflectors in what they consider high-risk areas that are defined by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. And this is one of those things that's a perfect example of if this was an individual company, let's say well, let's say XL Energy is building a power line, they probably would not be installing the bird flight deflectors, because that is more than likely, that is a condition that oftentimes you'll see as a result of NEPA, or you'll see as a result of discussion with the Forest Service, I'm sorry, the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service. So once again, the company is going above and beyond what normally you might see to protect certain species. Let's see, I already talked about it, but definitely in the order we put down, construction in areas that are culturally sensitive will not begin until the State Historical Preservation Office has concurred that no significant sites of historic properties are affected by the construction. So there will be those out there that will say the commission has now approved a route that's going to run through the battlefield. Well, you know what? There's an ongoing discussion that will continue with the State Historical Preservation Office, and there's ongoing discussions with a lot of different organizations, and even what the battlefield may or may not look like based on some of the other things going on. But back to, again, this is a process, and there's many other groups that are still involved in this discussion. And on that, the North Dakota Park Service American Battlefield Protection Program, we're aware, has awarded two grants for the Center of Heritage Renewal at North Dakota State University. And as you all know, I'm a good bison, so we always respect the viewpoints of people out there doing their work. It includes a study area of private land, 36 square miles, near the existing Kildare Battlefield. The study will determine if there's eligibility for potential inclusion into the National Registry of Historic Places. Presently, the study area has been determined eligible, Presently, the study area has not been determined eligible for the National Register of Historic Places. Cultural surveys have been done on all the land on the 8 miles that of the potential route that goes through the potential study area, and there was nothing found in the area that was studied. So that is very significant. The only thing is there's a half-mile section that the landowner has not granted study permission on that has not been been looked at. But I'll say one more time that the cultural surveys have been done on all lands in the study area except for that half-mile, and no cultural sites were identified during the survey that would be impacted by the project. So that's very big in my opinion. But even that being considered, the State Historical Society has filed their comments, and the they did ask that the proposed Gumbo Street substation be moved, and the company did approve of that. That was actually even before our hearing, so the company moved that substation that was of concern, and the SHPO recommended that there was a visual study take place, that additional archaeological investigations take place, and Basin is complying with everything this, the SHPO was asked for, but still the Basin will not be able to, as a condition of our order, will not be able to begin construction until they have final SHPO concurrence on this. So that's a very big thing. There's one more issue that, well, there's a lot of other issues, but this one I wanted to highlight, that the route passes through five existing airports. So Basin, of course, worked with the FAA and was able to work out approval from all of the sites except for the Williston area. There's a lot of discussion of where the Williston Airport may or may not be. So one of the hooks, the caveats that we put in the order here is that the city of Williston has to make sure they've granted the appropriate approval for Basin before they build the route dealing with the airport, because we had testimony that day that the people of Williston sure want this power line because they're going to be the ones benefiting from some of the generation. But there is ongoing discussion about where the airport route may or may not end up at, which could change, quite honestly, the route that is approved. And that's one thing, too, that the I keep segueing off here on this, but I think it's appropriate that go back to that center to Grand Forks line. That was approved over 2 years ago, and we're still getting requests from the company to make minor modifications for landowner requests, that we deal with those as they come. And that's where there's always the continuous dialogue back and forth with the companies, other stakeholders, and the PSC, because what the route looks like now, once you get out in the ground, things may change. And I'd even segue a little bit to the second case that I was involved in, the Fargo CapEx 2020 line. Very controversial line and discussion that these transmission lines are always challenging. But in that case, we had a lot of groups there that said, well, you can't vote in this transmission line until the diversion debate is completed. Well, here we are now X amount of years later, and if you want to start an argument in Fargo, all you have to do is bring up the diversion. And so I'm very glad in that particular case that the commission, we voted, we moved forward, we approved the route. There are still some changes that are being addressed by the company, but now as we're closing in on the next season where they absolutely need that energy in Fargo, had we not made those decisions at that time, that route would not be where it's at right now, and Fargo would be in danger of not having enough generation. So I think that's the backdrop that I always look at these transmission lines, is that you have to be able to think ahead what the need's going to be, make the decisions, and you're never going to have 100% certainty. It's a process. You make the decision with the best information. But as I look back at that CapEx decision, that was one of, I think, the best decisions that we made, is persevering through on that, because that they're going to have the transmission and the generation they need when they need it. I think of the alternative that if we were still waiting in that power line for diversion certainty, there'd be no diversion certainty, but the need for the power would still be there. So this, I think, is very similar, that I know there's going to be tweaks that come, but it's very important that we take this next big step in the process. Okay, let's see. Jumping down to a lot of conclusions that we have, but the biggest one that I wanted to highlight, the proposed transmission facility corridor and route will minimize adverse human and environmental impact while ensuring continued system reliability and integrity, ensuring the energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion. And that's right out of the charter of what the PSC is supposed to do. It doesn't say no adverse human effects. It says minimize adverse human and environmental impacts. And I believe we've done that, as well as the second mandate that we ensure continued system reliability, integrity, and energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely manner. And I talked about the conditions of some of the things. The big one to highlight again is we absolutely have to have SHPO concurrence that no historic properties or sites will be affected prior to beginning construction in areas associated with the reports. Basin shall complete SHPO recommendations and obtain SHPO concurrence on this before doing any construction in the area of the Kildare Battlefield study. Basin shall file with the Commission a copy of the final federal environmental impact statement and resulting findings prior to beginning construction. And on the Judson to Tandy segment, Basin shall provide the Commission with a letter from the Williston City Commission on their concurrence that the project will not interfere with the Siouxland Field Airport project. So a lot of dialogue here, but this is one of the biggest cases we've had in a while, and I think it's very appropriate that we move it forward now, and I'm urging my colleagues to vote for it. I am done for now.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. I guess I have kind of a broad overall perspective, but a few points that I want to highlight of that you covered some of these, but I think I just want to add a little more detail too. First of all, one that I don't believe you mentioned, this project, when it's completed, is going to pay about $60,000 a year in property taxes, $300 a mile. So whatever county you might live in that this traverses, there's some additional money coming in to keep your roads up, to keep the schools open, those types of things. And that's important. It's something that will be paid for a long time to come. And that, I believe, is just on the transmission line itself. There'll be additional taxes that will be owed on substations and things like that. So that's an important thing to those local economies. You mentioned the airport at you mentioned all the airports, but especially the one at Williston. You know, that has become encircled by the city. It's far too small for the needs of that area right now. And we think building a power line is tough. Building an airport is also very tough anymore, and especially in an area that has become as populated as Williams County has become. And so I think one thing that really impressed me was Basin Electric, over the course of a half a century, has built a reputation, and I've had my squabbles with Basin over the years too, but I mean, they've built a reputation of being a long-term company and working well here in the state and in the region. And I think we were able to see by the testimony and the lack of testimony in some instances that the people up there in the Williston area trust that the Basin is going to work with them as they, in the next year or two, hopefully resolve on a way to expand their airport or move their airport. And it's just going to have to be worked out. And if that means altering the line, as you had mentioned, that's something that will have to be done. But both of these things are key infrastructure developments that need to find a way to work hand in hand so we can get a power line in and we also get an airport developed. You talked about probably the area that I think drew the most public comment, and that's the Kildare Mountain Battlefield area. And I think what I keep thinking back to from the day of our hearing in Kildare was the fact that almost all the landowners in that Kildare Mountain battlefield say this is a good route and it should be approved. And as a rancher or former rancher myself, I'm proud of those guys. You know, I think they represent what North Dakota agriculture is all about. They have over the years, especially the Duvernack family, which owns so much of that acreage, they have made their land available for people to come out and enjoy themselves and to look around for artifacts and things like that. They have found many, many artifacts, and they're not being sold on eBay or hoarded in their basement. Much of that stuff is on display at Dickinson State University. They know they have a state treasure there. They don't abuse it. They have taken care of it and preserved it, and that's what I think most people in production agriculture tend to do. But they want to be treated with some respect. And in this case, as they testified, Basin Electric came in and was respectful and worked on a way to get this corridor through. I'm sure most of them would prefer that it not be there, probably, that it be somewhere else, but they understand the need for this and that it has to go somewhere and that this is the best place. And so they're making their land available for this and are willing to. And I just admire them for that, and I thought it should be pointed out. The big picture on the project in general, we know that the availability of power in western North Dakota is inadequate in the very near future. If utility companies are forced to shed load because of lack of power, it will be on a pro rata basis, so the shortage threatens everybody in the area. It's not that someone's just going to pick and choose, well, this user is more important, and so that their lights will be left on and this one can do without for a while. It will be on a pro rata basis. It will affect everybody. We know from experience that when that happens, in times of extremely cold weather or extremely hot weather, people die unnecessarily. This project is literally going to be a life preserver for that region, keeping lights and furnaces and air conditioners running when they're needed the most. But as vital as this project is, we need to also remember it's just a life jacket. The real rescue ship will be the construction of dependable baseload power generation. And unfortunately, the EPA and the environmental movement are making that as difficult and as costly as possible. They're causing our state and our nation to accept an undependable electric generation system that relies, in my opinion, much too heavily on wind turbines and solar power units and on relatively inefficient natural gas peaking plants. And this project buys us a little additional time, but the EPA still needs to be more realistic, and our energy industry needs to step up their efforts to make additional baseload generation a reality.
Anything else, Commissioner? Thank you, Annie.
Glad to have it off my chest.
It just goes back to there's a lot of need, and your points are on target. Commissioner Fedorchak?
Well, I guess I'll make a couple comments as well. As you all know, this concludes months of review and analyzing and public comment. Basin first started planning this in 2011. They submitted their application in 2013, and that's when we started reviewing it here at the PSC. We had our hearings, as Brian outlined, and that included nearly 30 hours of public comment. And after all of that, as you all know, a couple weeks ago, I asked for more time to review, a couple more weeks. And during that time, I went back and I looked at all of the public record, went through the public comment to see, again, what were people's issues and how could we best address them. So I think the process, the review process, has been very thorough, and I want to applaud the company for their cooperation and their efforts to pursue this project in a way that minimizes impact. I think we've worked very hard to minimize impact in the very sensitive areas that this project will run through. And they are precious, and we all appreciate these areas just as much as everybody in this room today and anybody who's listening online. This is a great part of North Dakota, and we want to do this project right. I think that this order today does minimize the impacts through these sensitive areas, and it does so by taking advantage of an existing transmission corridor through the Badlands area and Highway 85 and following that route where there is already impact and reducing further impacts in other sensitive areas. We also do make our best effort to minimize impacts by allowing the agencies that have the most expertise on these areas to put their stamp of approval on the final route. And I think that's really important as well. So as Brian mentioned, this is one stage of the process, but it isn't the final stage. This is a step, and it's an important one, and I'm proud to be part of it. But I think there's more to the story that will unfold, and it'll involve the experts that should be involved in these important decisions. There were a number of alternative routes considered, and they're all outlined in our order. There was an alternative to adding additional 115 kV lines, which proved to be inadequate. There were some efforts to look at crossing the lake further to the east, crossing the lake going around Lake Sakakawea more towards the Minot area, adding another circuit parallel to the 345 kV line through the Kildare area and avoiding the Badlands altogether. All of those were considerations, and they've been dismissed as of now, in our review, because of the increased length or impact, additional impacts, there was access issues on some of them, and ultimately reliability shortcomings. So the preferred route that we're providing an order on today addresses the need, takes advantage of the existing transmission corridor and Highway 85 that's already disturbing this area. Ultimately, I think it's really important for all of us to remember that this region is one of the fastest growing regions in the whole country. Mackenzie Electric, as Brian mentioned, 300% growth since 2005 and 69% in 2012 alone. Montrell Williams Electric also came to our hearings and talked about 40% load growth in 2013. In 2009, they had 78 megawatts of load. In 2012, that had grown to 194 megawatts. And in 2025, they project that to be their load demand to be 682 megawatts. This is long-time growth, long-term growth. We're spending millions of dollars investing in roads, hospitals, schools, community centers, airports. All of that will be for naught without power infrastructure to support it. This is the backbone. So, building off of Commissioner Christman's relationship between the power generation and the transmission, I agree with him. This is one step. We have a huge another step with the generation. And they're both very, very vital. They each play together. Having a transmission without generation, I compare that to having a car without gas. And having generation without transmission is having a gas with no car. You have to have both of them, and this is one important step. So I fall back on the same area that Commissioner Kalk mentioned. One of our key charges in reviewing this is to look at minimizing adverse human and environmental impacts, ensuring continued system reliability and integrity, and ensuring that energy needs are met and fulfilled in an orderly and timely fashion. I think this order before us today does those things and is the result of an exhaustive, thorough review with lots of public input, and I'm very pleased to support it.
Thank you, Commissioner. I just had one thought I wanted to add in there, is that Basin Electric over the last year has given their intention to join Southwest Power Pool, a regional transmission organization, and I've talked about that a little bit to the crowd here before, but the overall plan, I think, for North Dakota to meet these energy needs is going to be more North Dakota generation. It's going to be more transmission in North Dakota, but it's also going to be some reliance on these regional transmission organizations to where if Basin becomes part of this organization, they're already have some relationship with MISO, but you'll have MISO to the eastern, to the east in the Minnesota region, Southwest Power Pool to the south, quite honestly. And when these regional transmission organizations were designed or developed, it was the concept of when North Dakota would be peaking, the south wouldn't be peaking, or other regions, so they could flow power back and forth. So I think that always keep that in the backdrop, too. That'll be a big discussion for our state as that Southwest Power Pool opportunity develops. So, anyway.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
All right. Thank you, Darrell. Item BK2. I move the commission adopt the consent order in the Public Service Commission's damage prevention enforcement action concerning Heartland Grading, Inc., case number GS13-735.
Second.
Okay, this one, just a little background. Heartland Grading is a relatively new company to North Dakota with principal offices in Carlsbad, California. MDU is a North Dakota cooperation with principal offices right here in Bismarck. In August of 2013, the commission received a third-party damage complaint from MDU alleging that Heartland violated the North Dakota Century Code, the particular portion of one-call excavation system. And our staff did their thorough review, and staff concluded that on August 9, 2013, Heartland personnel began an excavation as defined under North Dakota Century Code while grading a parking lot at 509 Northeast 40th Avenue, Minot, North Dakota. Heartland did not provide an excavation notice as required by law at least 48 hours before the excavation. Based on its investigation, staff concluded that a 1 1/4 inch gas main was damaged during the excavation, and the amount of the damage was approximately $700. The operator has been reimbursed for damages, and one commercial customer lost service for approximately 1 hour. These are very dangerous things. I mean, you've got a company out there that doesn't call before they dig, and they've hit a 1.5-inch gas line. So, you know, we need to continue the education and awareness, but it just, we continue to have companies that do these things, and they continue to get lucky, which is good, that no one's getting injured or killed. But we really have to, you know, this month is call before you dig month. We need to continue the awareness, and it still amazes me. We have companies out there that are still digging and hitting gas lines, but we're going to keep up the efforts, and this is the first time this company's been in front of us, so the fine today is $1,000 that they've agreed to. And I will note that it's the cost of the damage was $700. They lost service for 1 hour. No one was injured or killed, so that kind of set the framework of that initial $1,000. But we do have that range of $0 to $25,000, and just because it's a company's first time doesn't mean we can't exercise that full range. But we have tried to stay, we have stayed very much on the, no one is injured, no one is killed. They did reimburse for damages. But I suspect that we might have more discussion this next legislative session on how we're going to deal with some of these, because I sense a larger frustration out there by some of those that have the infrastructure, whether it's MDU or Verendry Electric, that they might want us to be even more aggressive on our initial fines. But we had some very clear guidance from the legislature to make sure we follow a good pathway. So we're being very consistent with that, but it just still does amaze me. We have companies out there that are hitting gas lines and not even calling. So we're going to keep doing what we do.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. And finally, item BK3. I move the commission assess a filing fee of $10,000 and issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in the application of Northern State Power Company for modification or amendment to Certificate of Public Convenience and Necessity number 5465 in order to relocate the 230 KV Peace Garden switching station approximately 2 miles north of its previously permitted location in Rolette County, North Dakota, case number PU12-69.
Second.
This one is in March of 2012, the commission issued a certificate of public convenience and necessity to NSP to construct and operate a proposed 230 KV Peace Garden switching station and 300 feet of KV line to interconnect the proposed Border Winds Energy Project to the existing 230 KV Rugby to Glenboro transmission line. In March of this year, NSP filed a petition for modification to the PCNN to extend facilities necessary to relocate the switching station approximately 2 miles directly north of the permitted location. So they've had a modification, looks to where they want to tie into the sub-at, so it's appropriate that we address this. Comments and requests for hearings must be received by May 30th of this year. And if appropriate, the commission can determine this matter without a formal hearing.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Since seeing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thanks, Darrell. That concludes the items in my portfolio. Commissioner Crisman.
Well, Mr. Chairman, RC1, I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-14-048, granting the request of Concord Grain LLC of Aberdeen, South Dakota, to operate as a roving grain buyer in North Dakota.
Second.
Concord Grain will purchase grain in North Dakota for delivery to a recently constructed 2,587,000 bushel grain facility in Aberdeen, South Dakota. They estimate purchasing 1.5 million bushels of grain in North Dakota during the first year in operation and filed a corresponding $255,000 surety bond. The facility in Aberdeen will be operated under a U.S. Warehouse Act license. Concord Grain informed the commission that it has not transacted business as a roving grain buyer in North Dakota, so we have no outstanding debts or tickets or anything like that. Statutory compliance has been met, and staff recommends that a license be issued.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Commissioner Crisman, I just have a question on this. Is the $255,000 surety bond, is that the level set out in statute, or did staff review it and add a different amount? Do you know?
Well, it's not set out in statute, but it's
or in our rules.
In the rules, as we have, it's the amount for that level of bushels that has been done in the past on roving grain buyers.
All right.
Is there further discussion? Since none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC2, I move the commission submit the 2015 administration and enforcement grant application to the Office of Surface Mining to request federal funds for the coal regulatory program for the next grant period that begins July 1st of 2014 and ends June 30th of 2015.
Second.
The Office of Surface Mining recently announced the allocation of federal funds for the federal share of state coal regulatory programs for the next grant periods. We have been, in North Dakota, allocated $944,000, just over that, for the next fiscal year that runs from this July until June of 15. The 2015 application has been prepared and is ready to submit to OSM. The total amount of the grant application, including the state share, is $1,459,595. This includes both direct and indirect costs. Of this total, the federal share is just over $934,000, or about $10,000 less than our allocation. The state share is just over $525,000. The federal-state funding split will be 64% federal and 36% state, based on OSM's federal lands funding formula, and that formula considers the federal coal acreage in existing permits and applications that will permit new acreage. The operating items proposed in the 2015 grant budget are more than half of the operating funds that were budgeted for the Reclamation Division for this biennium. We spent less than budgeted during the first year of the biennium and plan to use much of the unspent funds before June 30th of 2015 to scan old permit documents that are in the basement vault and make them more useful for years to come.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
Thank Jim and his crew for the work they do. They have very detailed work, and thank you guys.
Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
RC3 and RC4 were actually a typo. They're the same thing, and somehow RC3 was the one that was chosen to be eliminated. So we skip through that and jump right to RC4. I move the commission adopt an order in case number GE-14-171, granting the request of Great Plains Processing, LLC, doing business as Northern Plains Grain and Milling, to operate a 157,000-bushel grain warehouse at Rame, North Dakota, effective immediately.
Second.
Great Plains Processing currently licenses a grain warehouse at Valley City, Berea. And Berea is, as everyone knows, just east of Sanborn, or is probably more likely people know, just west of Valley City. And they buy grain, clean it, and package it for shipping to pet food companies. They inform the commission they have not transacted any business as a public warehouseman at the Rame facility. Statutory compliance has been met, and staff recommends the request be approved.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
That concludes my portfolio.
All right. Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Fedorchak.
Okay. I move the commission approve the revised tariffs and rate changes filed by Great Plains Natural Gas Company, case number PU-13-551.
Second.
Last October, the commission approved converting Great Plains Natural Gas Company's billing units from MCFs to DKs. Decatherms. However, it was discovered that the conversion calculation contained the wrong atmospheric pressure for Wahpeton. And in the category of you learn something new every day, apparently this is a big deal. So they pulled it. They have not been implementing this, or they didn't make the change. They have since corrected the conversion factor and filed a revised tariff changes, and other than that, there's no changes to what we approved previously. So basically, this would take effect May 6th. The rates that customers pay with this conversion, they aren't going to be paying more. It's just a conversion in how what they're using is measured, and so they'll appear to be paying a higher rate, but they'll be getting more gas as a result. So it's a wash for the customers, and the MDU wants to do this because the other parts of their system are on this type of measurement, and so they want system uniformity.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the commission adopt the order reissuing certificate and permit in joint applications of Hess Corporation and Hess Tioga Gas Plant, LLC, to transfer route permit number 72 and certificate of corridor compatibility number 62 from Hess Corporation to Hess Tioga Gas Plant, LLC, case number PU-14-95 and case number PU-14-96.
Second.
On March 11, 1992, the commission issued certificate of corridor compatibility number 62 to Hess Corporation to construct 61 miles of 10-inch diameter pipelines in Williams and McKenzie counties to transport natural gas from Hess Tioga Gas Plant to an interconnect with Northern Border Pipeline. Later that year, the commission issued route permit number 72 to Hess for the same line. On January of this year, Hess Corporation and Hess Tioga Gas Plant filed joint applications to transfer both this route permit and certificate of corridor compatibility to Hess Tioga. On March 12th, we issued a notice of opportunity for a consolidated hearing, provided a deadline of April 15th for filing written comments or requests for hearing. No comments or requests for hearing were filed. In January, Hess Corporation and Hess Tioga filed the affidavit of Gert Schoenman, Vice President of Hestayoga, stating that Hestayoga will assume the rights and obligations of Route Permit Number 72 and Certificate of Corridor Compatibility Number 62, including the conditions and limitations set forth in the original orders from 1992. For these reasons, the Commission finds that Hestayoga has agreed and is able to comply with these terms and conditions, and I recommend we approve this transfer.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
I move the Commission issue a notice of hearing in Montana Dakota Utility Company's applications for a generation resource recovery rider, tariff case number PU-14-108, and rates case number PU-14-109.
Second.
On February 27th, MDU filed for approval to implement a generation resource cost recovery rider. MDU proposes to recover costs associated with its new 88-megawatt simple cycle combustion turbine generator known as Heskett 3, located in Mandan. A public hearing in this matter is scheduled to begin on May 28th at 1 p.m. in the Commission hearing room here in the Capitol. The issue to be considered are whether the proposed generation resource cost recovery rider and rate increases should be approved. Little side note on here, this is expected that this plant, this simple cycle combustion turbine, is expected to be operational by this July. It has come in at $76.1 million, which is 11% less than the projected cost. And the customers would pay, if we approved this rider, an average of $3.62 per month for the average residential customer to cover the cost of constructing this new generation facility. This is similar to a renewable energy tracker that's used by Otter Tail Power, so the Commission has done this type of thing in the past, and it's a mechanism to recover the cost of a new generation resource in between rate cases. So there's a lot of questions that we'll be asking the company as a result of this application and reviewing, but this is the first step of getting that consideration rolling.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Just to add to Commissioner Fedorchuk's comments, she's right on mark with, we have used this renewable energy in the past for the trackers because there's such variation in the cost that it's nice to have an annual true-up. So I certainly look forward to the hearing and discussions, but I'll certainly ask a lot of questions about how this might be applied to something like should be a fixed cost. So we'll see. But I think it's an appropriate for us to look at this, and it might be a good opportunity, but it's, you pointed out, it's going to be a good hearing.
Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
The next two are similar with different companies, so I'll kind of go through the whole thing on the first one and then just give you the update for the MDU order. I move the Commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Otter Tail Power Company's environmental cost recovery rider, case number PU-14-142.
Second.
On December 18th of last year, the Commission approved Otter Tail Power Company's environmental cost recovery rider tariff and rates. This provides for an adjustment of rates to recover the costs and operating expenses incurred to comply with the federal mandates for environmental upgrades to the Big Stone Electric Generation Plant. So this is to cover the costs that the Otter Tail and MDU are expending to upgrade the Big Stone plant for the MATS, basically the MATS regulation. The rate adjustment is applied as a percentage of base rates to bills rendered on and after January 1st. Currently, the companies are paying a 4.1% on top of their existing rates to cover the costs of this project. The issues to be considered in this proceeding are whether the proposed rate adjustments, the proposed rate adjustment would be a 7.5% rate adjustment on top of their original base rate to cover the costs for the year July 1st of 2014 through June 30th of 2015. Those interested are invited to comment on the application in writing. Comments and requests for a hearing must be received by May 30th of 2014. So currently, Otter Tail customers are paying $3.61. Average customers are paying $3.61 a month for these upgrades. This proposal for the next year, July 1st through June 30th, 2015, would be an increase of $2.96 for a total of $6.57 to cover the cost of making these improvements to abide by federal environmental mandates. Basically, just as a reminder, Big Stone is they're adding a bag house to take care of particulate matter, dry scrubbers to deal with SO2 emissions, and a selective catalytic converter to take care of NOx emissions, nitrous oxide. The initial budget for this project was $489 million. In the spring of 2013, that was revised down to $405 million. And with this filing, they've revised that estimate further down again, which is kind of nice, to $384 million. So it's a 20% total decrease in the projected cost of that project. And Otter Tail's North Dakota customers' total share for that will be $83 million.
We have a motion and a second. Is there any further discussion?
I just want to add the importance of our opening comments about that CO2 symposium that was set somewhere way back when, somewhere these MATS rules got put into place, and now it's federal law, and now there's a cost that's going to come to customers. And I think oftentimes people forget that when we're having this debate about what federal rules may or may not be, there will be a cost at the end to go to customers. And so if we don't shape these CO2 rules correctly, at some point in time there'll be three commissioners sitting here increasing the cost of generation for CO2 rules. And so that, I think, we always have to tie those two pieces together.
Yeah, this is an interesting one because it's a hard cost for customers. You can see it right on your bill, how much this is costing you.
And there's no wiggle room. They have to comply.
And in this case, it was the least cost alternative for this generation source. So it was cheaper than what customers would have paid to replace this with something different. You add on CO2, and that question becomes a lot fuzzier. And whether that's affordable or not. So this is a prime example of stranded costs that people could be faced with if CO2 regulations come in and render this plant not cost effective, because customers will still have to pay for all of this, and or somebody's going to have to. Maybe the federal government will do that.
With what?
So, yeah, with your taxpayers. Dollars. So anyway, this is a good example of a potential stranded cost that customers could be facing as a result of CO2 regulation.
Is there any further discussion? Since they're not all in favor, signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
The next motion covers MDU's portion of this same project. I move the commission issue a notice of opportunity for hearing in Montana Dakota Utility Company, a division of MDU Resources Group, Inc.'s Environmental Cost Recovery Rider Tariff, case number PU-14-143.
Second.
So all the same setup applies in MDU's case. The current customers are currently paying $2.03 a month. The new rates would be $4.63 per month for an increase of $2.60. In North Dakota, MDU customers are paying $63 million of this total project cost. The total project cost is $384 million.
Do we have a motion and a second? Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor, signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed, motion is approved.
Okay, I'm getting close to the end. Only two left. I move the commission deem complete the applications of Bell Fouche Company Pipeline Company for a corridor certificate, route permit, and waiver of procedures and time schedules. I further move the Commission issue a notice of filings and notice of hearing in Balfouche Pipeline Company 10-inch crude oil pipeline Billings Dunn Stark siting application case number PU-14-135.
Second.
On March 20th, Balfouche Pipeline Company filed an application for a certificate of corridor compatibility and route permit for the construction of a 20-mile, 10-inch crude oil pipeline in Billings, Dunn, and Stark counties. The commission has found that the applications are complete, and this notice basically sets out that we will be having a hearing that I believe we'll be scheduling in our scheduling portion of admin. This is a $7.9 million project, 20 miles, 10-inch new crude oil pipeline, as I mentioned. It'll have the capacity for 100,000 barrels per day, and it's interconnecting Balfouche's Skunk Hill Station to its Dickinson area facilities. Specifically, it'll provide 20,000 barrels per day of crude to the Dakota Prairie Refining facility and 80,000 barrels per day to the Bakken Oil Express crude oil rail facility. It is paralleling an existing 6-inch line that Balfouche already has that is maxed out and reached its capacity, and so they are going to parallel that line with this new 10-inch pipeline that is will have the 100,000 barrels per day capacity. And they estimated to begin and complete, near as I can tell, this project this summer.
We have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Motion is approved.
The next, my last issue deals with the electric service in the Wofford City area, which is at the crux of the very first application that we discussed today. I move the Commission assess a filing fee of $10,000 and issue a notice of filing, notice of informal hearing, notice of opportunity for hearing, and the joint application of MDU and McKenzie Electric Cooperative for approval of an electric service area agreement and the resulting issuance of a certificate of public convenience and necessity to establish and designate service locations to be served by MDU and McKenzie Electric within and around the city of Wofford City, North Dakota, case numbers PU-14-157 and PU-14-158.
Second.
On June 27th, MDU filed a joint application for approval of a service area agreement to establish service areas to be served by MDU and McKenzie Electric around and within the city of Wofford City. The issues to be considered are whether agreement complies with North Dakota Century Code and whether the approval of the service area agreement and resulting certificate issuance are compatible with public interest. Those interested are invited to comment on the application. Comments and requests for hearings must be received by May 30th of 2014. An informal hearing on this matter is set for May 6th at 1:30 p.m. in the Commission hearing room. And at the informal hearing, we'll discuss the matter with the parties and interested members of the public. The map shows an interesting, is a real telltale sign of how much Wofford City is growing. It extends the boundaries for both MDU and the McKenzie Electric quite a ways out of where Wofford City has traditionally been, and really underlines the significant growth this community is experiencing. And again, it's great to see this cooperation. I was in Valley City yesterday and applauded Cass Electric for their cooperation with the Valley City Municipal Electric Provider. And here again is another good example of the companies working together and coming up with a plan that works best for them and their customers.
Okay, we have a motion and a second. Is there further discussion?
Just an admin note that we have an informal on May 6th, but of course we won't make any decisions till after the period of May 30th. So if someone requests a formal hearing, we certainly would honor that. But we oftentimes do the informal ahead of time, and if there's no request for one, then we can move forward.
Is there further discussion? Sensing none, all in favor signify by saying aye.
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 Those opposed? Motion is approved.
Thank you, Darrell. Anything else, Commissioner?
That it? That's it.
Okay, just a couple announcements before we open it up for questions. We, of course, I have my page until I need it. The couple big work sessions coming up this Friday, the 25th, we'll be having a work session on the Enbridge pipeline. It'll be our first work session since the hearings, so that'll be a fun-filled event, I'm sure. The May 1st, we have a, for the first time in a long time, Tom's Backhoe Service is going to come in and talk about damage prevention enforcement. It's the first call before you dig since I've been here that, I think probably ever, because we didn't enforce it till I got here. But we're going to hold a full-fledged hearing on it and see how that all plays itself out. So that'll be a first time for the commission. We also have a public convenience and necessity formal hearing on May 2nd between MDU and Burley County dealing with the new Menards workspace east of town here. So that'll also be the first time we've seen one of those in quite some time. May 12th will be in Stark and Morton counties out in the Hebron Community Center for a hearing on the Sunflower Wind Project. And that should kind of do it for a while. So lots going on. And any questions, comments from my colleagues before we open it up for questions?
I would just mention the Monday, the 28th, meetings with the railroads on their service and safety upgrades in North Dakota, and also that morning meetings with the grain dealers and producers to get their take on what they're experiencing in terms of service challenges with the railroads.
Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Crisp, anything else?
Not in the form of an announcement, just one thing I missed on one of my agenda items, RC1, with Concord Grain. Just in case there's anyone who wonders why it was put off 2 weeks ago, if you recall, I was on the road that day, and I want to thank everybody for your patience and making it possible to call in so I could attend the North Dakota Ag Rail Coalition that was being held in Fargo that day. But at the last minute, I noticed that I didn't have anything with me documenting that, in fact, they had not already transacted business. And because I was gone, I was unable to get with the licensing folks and confirm that. And so that's why I just held it off these 2 weeks to make sure that we weren't just licensing a problem.
Good call. All right. Any questions from the audience? We'd be happy to entertain.
When is the hearing date, Julie, for the Otter Tail and MDU?
Let's see. Did we? We're setting that, I believe. Let me pull that out again. No, we just are asking. There isn't a hearing set for sure on the environmental cost recovery stuff. Yeah, it's just that we're giving people the opportunity for a hearing and haven't decided yet if we'll have one.
By May 30th. Comments, we have requests by May 30th for comments and requests for hearing. All right, going once, going.
Why not wait till after federal approval has been granted to give the state approval? I mean, you've got these conditions in here now that they have to file it with you afterward, but why not just wait?
Well, I go back to my comments about the Fargo CapEx line, that the area that we have jurisdiction on, that we have certainty on, I think it's important that when we have the questions answered, we move forward on it, because sometimes these other jurisdictional bodies will go on forever. And so I think it's, quite honestly, we also have, the state law says that we have 6 months from when the application is complete to make a decision. So we're actually outside of that a little bit. But why not wait? Because the requirements that I believe we have jurisdiction on, we have been met. And I'm aware of the other entities out there. But as I talked about my background in NEPA, NEPA is a separate process. And that process needs to run its course. And when they've come out with their final determination, whether it's a no impact with the mitigation or what, but it is completely a separate process. So why not wait? Because we've got the information we need to make a decision, and we need to move forward because people need power. If I would have waited for the diversion certainty, we'd still be waiting. So, I mean, that's the best example I can give, Mike.
And I think I would add to that, by us waiting, I think gives some other groups an excuse why they're waiting, because, they're waiting for the North Dakota PSC to do something. There are times when you have to wait, and so you do. But there are times when you don't have to, and in that case, in North Dakota, we lead, and that's what we're doing here.
Well, in the state jurisdiction, I mean, NEPA is not even applicable to private companies. It's just a federal nexus. So there is a jurisdictional discussion, too, that we'll do what's in our jurisdiction, and don't need to necessarily submit ourselves to other jurisdictions, but we are aware of that discussion.
The Killdeer Mountain Battlefield is an example of what Randy is talking about in terms of kind of the chicken and the egg, who goes first, because we can't and won't give approval until SHPO says they have, you know, no impact. So finding of no impact, no significant impact. Well, they can't do that until they get access to all the land to go out and survey. And there's certain parts of the land that hasn't been surveyed yet because they can't have access. So you just sort of have to break the logjam, get the thing rolling. And that's why I think it's appropriate to have some of these, have our approval contingent on the completion of some of these other processes. And however those are completed will be incorporated into this final order.
The Williston Airport, Randy highlighted on that too. I mean, there will certainly be some discussion about the Williston Airport, and it'll, as that shakes itself out, we'll probably end up making some modifications in that area. Okay, I'll go again. Go once.
The second power line by Basin, have they filed a notice?
They have not. They don't need to file no longer as a notice of intent. We'll just get the application, but in the hearing, and I know in other discussions, they're going to need other power lines. So that's where the whole NEPA discussion. There's the NEPA process. The way I've read through it is it's talking about this line and other lines. So it does get a little muddy that the NEPA they're doing now will be for other projects that may come in front of us. So when we see that next power line, there may be some certainty in the NEPA before it even gets to us.
And that route you're referring to, that was one that just wasn't capable of handling this line? Is that
at this point in time, yes. That is correct. But it looks like it didn't meet the requirements of what they needed this time, but they've also said they probably will need that line for other concerns in the future. But that'd be best to ask that question to Basin, I think, what their needs are.
Do we know if NEPA has a deadline?
NEPA has a lot of criteria to where they're, once you have your draft, you got X amount of days for comment. Once you have your final, there's X more comments. Once the record of decision is signed, there's X amount of time. But those deadlines can all slide. So there's not like a hard and fast NEPA. It has to be done by – the biggest thing that I've seen in NEPA is that the comment period deadlines and the appeal periods, those are the ones that are triggers. But once the agency head – like once the record of decision – once the final package gets signed to the person that signs the record of decision, they don't have any constraints. It could sit there for a year. They don't have to act on it.
Also, Mike, regarding that other – proposed route that we expect may be applied for, that would really do nothing for the Charlie Creek area and the southern McKenzie County area as well. So,
I was going to show you guys a map when I was talking about this, but if you look at the map, you can see, you won't be able to see, but you can come up later and look at it. Wherever you go around here, there's challenges. If you go north from the power generation facilities, you've got to cross the lake. And you're probably going to have to cross the lake again. And if you go north and just straight over, you've got the Indian Reservation, Fort Berthold, and there's a lot of access challenges there. If you go north around this way, you leave out Watford City and that whole area entirely. If you go the way they suggested, you can see there's already an existing power line and the road going right through the area where they've proposed to go, and that's the route that they're following. So the map really kind of outlines some of the roadblocks that exist with some of the alternatives and points to why this particular route ultimately became the preferred route.
Okay, Nick, did you have anything? No? Mike, Jim, Dave, one Mary Kate?
about the JF7. Maybe I'm just not thinking, but I don't remember you assessing a filing fee for these power agreements before, have you?
I don't believe we have, because most of those we have had requests for formal hearings, but no one has asked for it, so we just do it with an informal. I don't know. I'll look at Jerry on that. We have. Jerry's saying we have. Okay. Just in case, we need to do a full hearing, huh? Jerry said the law was changed a session before last. Okay.
So we assess it. Whatever isn't used is returned.
Good catch, Dave.
I do have one more. The call before you dig.
Yes, sir.
Brian, I was reading your press release. You're getting 1.1 million hits on that, on your hotline or requests.
I'll look at Stacy, who got that number from the utility folks. What was the number?
It was
That sounds correct, because they're starting to get as in 30,000 out there, each different service area. So that's very – we would have got those numbers from the one call direct.
Who's actually fielding those calls and responded to them?
The way it works is – well, the call comes into Ryan Schmaltz and his crowd, like locating the center, and then they distribute down to the individual co-ops or those that actually do the locates. So the calls come into the main hub, if you will, and they get disseminated down depending whether it's reservation telephone or MDU. But we've heard from reservation telephone that they're doing upwards of 30,000 locates a month. And so it's just bizarre what's going on out there.
And one single person is fielding those calls? And
I don't think that's probably accurate, but I'm sure there's a team in place. So I can get some more back to you exactly the setup of the one call matrix, I guess.
Those calls go into an operations center. And
a state-funded operations center?
Or funded by the industries.
It is funded, yeah. Okay.
They kick in X amount of dollars to run the whole one call program.
Unless it's changed, I believe the operations center works with multiple states even. We're one of their clients.
Okay. Good question.
This is an interesting little story that might be worth pursuing because they...
giving it to my colleagues.
All the utility companies have to do their own locates, and some of them have expended a lot of money and have numbers. How many does the folks up in, like, Montreal Williams, I forget how many employees they have just dedicated just to going out and doing locates?
They're hiring
dozens of people just doing the locates, nothing else.
And that was the debate during the last session about, okay, thanks to utility shareholders and others, we all kind of formed this coalition about raising the fines for one call, and they were supportive of that. But one of the things they asked for was move the time frame where locates are good from 10 days to 21 to relieve some of the pressure on the locators. And so now we've heard back that 21 days, some want to go all the way to 30, some want to ratchet it back down to 15, so that might come back up. But that was one of the horse trading, if you will, on the locates being extended longer. And I think that's appropriate because other states are 30 days, but that does take a lot of pressure off the locators, give them twice as much time, literally. Okay, going once, going twice. All right, we'll go ahead and close the official portion of our meeting. Let's meet again at, let's say, 11:30, give ourselves some time. Thank you all.